Hello there, and welcome to the Tech Marketing Trends, the podcast where we dive deep into the latest strategies, insights, and innovation driving the tech marketing world today. I'm your host, I'm Jacob Lovenbrand. I'm the CEO of Bright Vision. And in this episode, we're exploring the transformative power of habits and trust in sales, a topic that's crucial for anyone looking to elevate their sales game in the tech industry. And that's what we're trying to achieve here, to help you on a little bit in that space. So, we have invited a very special guest today, Andrew Sykes. Andrew is a renowned expert in the fields of habits, behavior change, and sales performance. He's the founder of a company called Habits at Work that helps organizations thrive by embedding powerful habits into their daily routines. And he's also a celebrated speaker and educator working out of the college university in Chicago, but also having a lot of engaging talks and workshops for companies all around. So without further ado, let's dive into our conversation and welcome to the podcast, Andrew.
Awesome. It's wonderful to be here. And I know you're based in Gothenburg, one of my favorite places in Sweden. So it's very awesome to meet you and to be on this show with you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And so happy that you actually have been here. One of the few podcast guests that actually been to Gothenburg. so that's a good start. And, you know, I gave you a short introduction here. I know you have a long career and you have done a lot of stuff, both in the academia world and also driving company and so forth. So maybe you can just give us a little bit of background and what you're up to these days, Andrew, so we know a little bit more about you.
Sure. Well, you'll very quickly tell from my accent that I'm not from America, which is where I live. I grew up in South Africa, started and ran my first business there. And I've spent many years of my career in healthcare, which may seem unrelated to sales, and indeed it is, except for I discovered in this pursuit of helping people to be healthy that diagnosing what's wrong with people and treating them, that's interesting. But what really drives longevity and health outcomes is the lifestyle we lead, or more simply said, the habits that we practice. And so a couple of decades ago, I set up a behavioral research lab called BRATLAB, the Behavioral Research Applied Technology Laboratory, to study which habits really matter to performance in life and at work. And then why is it so very difficult for people to create and sustain new habits? And although that started in healthcare, it very quickly expanded to leadership, management, and sales, a passion of mine since I started my first business at age 21. And so today, Habits at Work focuses not on sales training, but on sales habit activation. In other words, you know, it doesn't matter how smart you are. What matters is how much of what you know you can put into practice as an embodied skill reliably over time. Or said more simply, what matters is your habits to producing who you are as a human and the results that you get. And at the Kellogg School of Management, where I'm privileged to be part of the Kellogg Sales Institute, I teach a lot of these concepts of not only how to create habits, but which habits have salespeople show up and just build trust in milliseconds to minutes, earn or use that trust to help customers make progress in their lives, and help me on my mission to change the way that salespeople are seen. Because I think we are the least trustworthy profession on the planet by reputation, and I'd like to change that. My life mission is to have sales be considered as one of the most respected and most trustworthy professions. So that's my story.
Wow, I love that statement. You know, what a mission statement. And fantastic. And I think you're coming far away on that journey, of course, but so interesting to dive into that. And I think we should start with the habit side and then maybe transition into the trust side as we go along here. But what sparked your interest in habits for sales? Can you expand a little bit about that background and how you started doing that and why is that so important?
Yeah, well, as I said, there's this healthcare background and it may sound a little weird, but I grew up in South Africa at a time when smoking advertising was everywhere. I'm the youngest of 8 kids. And the result of that, at least that's my story, is the explanation for why I had my first cigarette when I was just 6 years old. Now, I didn't start smoking 20 packs a day, but I caught my older brother who was having a cigarette and puffing on it. And he asked me to try so that I wouldn't tell my mom, you know, get you involved in the trouble. Yeah. And it became the beginning of what led to a 3 decades long smoking habit. And along the way, I qualified as an actuary. If you don't know what that is, we study what kills people, what makes people sick, the statistics of life and health. And so I had all the knowledge, made no difference. I was running a health insurance company selling smoking cessation programs, and that made no difference. Mm. So I finally, out of frustration, you know, asked myself, what does it actually take for apparently smart enough people to know the risks to actually do what they know? And so that's what sparked my curiosity in habits. Why is it so difficult for humans to change habits? And being a lifelong seller, I then started to apply that thinking into what determines great sellers. Are they born or are they built? And I'm convinced that they're built. Mm. Certainly this one is built. I was not a natural salesperson as a young adult. And then if they're built, what are they built out of? And my view is habits are the Lego blocks from which personality, performance outcomes, and culture is built. And so now, you know, my view is pretty much every business problem can be boiled down to this question. How do we get a bunch of people to start doing what we want them to do reliably over time? Or how do we get a bunch of people to stop doing the wrong things in a more elegant way? How do we create the habits of high performance?
Awesome. Wow. That's a cool story that turned into, you know, your field of work. So that's interesting. And you draw the parallels to health and wellness and the habits, you know, getting out of smoking habits and things like that, also in parallel to sales and so forth. And if we zoom in a little bit on the sales habits, I know you have written a lot about this and research and so forth, but how do you approach habits within the sales context and changing habits in there, and what habits are important, you know, and so forth?
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of habits that make up being an extraordinary salesperson. Mm-hmm. I think there are sort of 12 of them that are most important. Mm-hmm. But it starts right at this beginning question, which is, what actually is selling? Mm. And for a lot of people, selling is convincing someone to buy a product that solves a problem that they have. Mm. I don't feel that that's a great definition. So for me, the working definition I prefer is, selling is helping another human being make progress in their lives, whether or not that involves using your product. Ideally so, but I often have meetings where the outcome is, I would say, Jacob, I think I can help. And the best way I can help is to introduce you to someone else or give you a piece of advice and, you know, send you on your way, rather than sell you what I do. And I would still consider that a successful sale. Now, if that's what you view selling to be, then it turns out that the first job in sales is not being a product expert or a sales methodology advocate or expert. It is simply having someone else believe that they can trust you. I'd like to say it this way. First, customers decide that they want to buy advice from you before they decide if or what they want to buy from your company. And so a lot of the habits that define great salespeople are the habits that address the fact that when you show up as a salesperson, most people are skeptical. They don't trust you because of your title. They worry that you have a commission-based motive that's self-interested rather than in their interests. And so they put you in a trust hole. And that's why so many salespeople say, you know, trust takes time to build. And we've all had that experience, but none of the research says that that's true. Most people assess another human being as trustworthy or not in milliseconds to minutes. And often salespeople's habits to introduce themselves by saying, hi, my name is Andrew, I'm a salesperson, is an invitation for you to put me into a bucket of untrustworthy. So it starts right in what I call the platinum 5 minutes. What habits have you show up and change someone's view that you're an untrustworthy salesperson, like all the rest of them by reputation, into, I think you're a human being driven by purpose and passion, humility and trustworthiness, and I'm prepared to give you the next 55 minutes that make up this golden hour. And why I call it that is, I think that 95% of a sale has happened in the first hour of a relationship.
Really? Yeah.
Now, I don't think that hour includes much or any discussion about your product or your company. Because if it's true that customers first buy you, and then if they do, they believe what you say, the pitching and the negotiating is not, it's not trivial, but it's the easy part.
Yeah.
The hard part is, can you earn the right to have someone trust what you say.
Yeah.
And that all happens in the first hour.
And you have described in your literature important habits. If you just give the top three here that a salesperson should start to think about if they're new to the concept, you know, which I think maybe some are still, where should we start, you know, with the habit stacking or habit thinking in order to build that trust?
I think there are three really good places to start. I wouldn't say one is more important than the other. All three are important. The first one usually happens first in a relationship is the habit of presenting yourself as a trustworthy person. Mm-hmm. And I often say this to salespeople. Are you honest? Yes. Do you have good intentions? Yes. Do you tell the truth? Yes. And I say, congratulations, that makes you someone with integrity. It's got nothing to do with whether someone else deems you to be trustworthy. Because people use false signals to decide if you're trustworthy before they've actually had the time to see, do you tell the truth? Do you keep your promises, etc.? So the very first habit is how you design your first impression to make it easy for other people to say, Jakob seems like a trustworthy, interesting human. I'll give him a little bit of my time. And what's in that habit? Well, of course, how you present yourself physically, your executive presence, eye contact, open body posture, a big smile, all of those physical cues. But the gem of it is what I call your personal origin story, which is how you answer the question, tell me a little bit about yourself. And most people say, you know, rank, name, serial number. I'm Andrew, I'm the head of sales, or I'm a salesperson, and maybe here's a resume summary. And it's not just boring, but it also identifies you with the group of people that most customers don't like, salespeople. And if you try and hide behind it by saying, I'm a business development executive, it's even worse because now you seem to be hiding what you are. So I don't say hide that you're a salesperson, but I do say when you're introducing yourself, share a little bit about why you do what you do. Because people are wondering, who are you and what do you want? And unless you answer those questions, they're going to assume you're a salesperson who wants to make money in commission from a sale. So rather than saying, my name's Andrew, I'm a salesperson, I'm so happy to be here, I can't wait to tell you about my products, I might say, if I was selling to you, Jakob, I started my career in health and wellness where I learned that what matters to outcomes is habits, not knowledge. And so a few years ago, I decided to set up Habits at Work to help salespeople develop the habits that allow other people to view them as trustworthy. And today I have the extraordinary privilege of helping some of the world's leading technology and healthcare businesses embed these habits into their culture. And it just gives you a sense of like what I'm about and what I'm driven by other than money. Wow. And then there are two other habits that I think are really useful. One is, frankly, being so good that people just want to be in your presence. And that is the habit of deliberate practice. You know, for most of us, we pretend that experience makes us better. But experience is just doing something over and over again. Like driving, the more you do it, the worse you get because bad habits creep in, which is why most of us are perfectly good enough to drive from A to B, but we're not amazing racing car drivers because we don't go about driving as something we want to get great at. We think it's something where that good enough is good enough. And that's okay for driving because it's got nothing to do with your profession. But for a lot of people in business, they think that experience equals quality. And it's the opposite. Just think about all the domains of expertise from chess playing to ballet to music to sports. The rule is the better you get, the more time you practice. In business, it's the opposite. The more experience you get, the less time you practice. So the second habit is the habit of practicing with the intention of getting better with a coach who gives you the right kind of performance feedback so that you end up being better and better at the habits of presenting yourself, pitching, all the other things that lead to a great sales outcome. And then my third habit is the habit of listening with your heart, or what I call empathic listening. And when people hear that, they usually say, active listening. I've done a course in that. I'm really good at it. And my response is active listening and empathic listening are very, very far apart. Active listening is making a show of listening. Tell me more. Interesting. You know, nodding along. empathic listening is the courageous and vulnerable art or craft of allowing yourself to feel what someone else feels and then daring to share back that entire experience with them so that they feel seen and heard and understood and gotten in all the best ways. Like, we love great listeners because they give us the opportunity to feel all those things and to speak about the thing we love the most, ourselves. And salespeople are good listeners, but there's a difference between being good and extraordinary. So those are my top three habits.
Wonderful. Thank you. Really interesting insights here. And, you know, we spend a lot of time training salespeople, if it's in SDR roles, inside sales, or account executives or account managers in different. And we had different frameworks, whatever they call, you know, all these kind of spin and solution and medics and matics and all these techniques and questioning. You should ask this first and then that, and then you should prove value. How do you see that in relationship to this more, you know, habits and trust? How should we spend our training and cultivating our sales teams from your perspective?
You can imagine I have a strong point of view on this.
I suppose so.
So firstly, I'll say I love a good sales methodology, whether it's, you know, Miller-Harmon or Sandler or the medic system. There are very good sales methodologies and processes, and I encourage people to think about them. However, as a customer, I don't want to feel like you're putting me through your process. I want to feel like you're accompanying me on my process. And sometimes a strict adherence to our sales methodology feels like I'm putting you through my factory to a customer.
Yeah.
So I would bet on someone with extraordinary habits over someone with a phenomenal sales methodology all day long. Mm. Put the two together, and I think you're unstoppable if you remember that our process is our process. It's different from my customer's process. And my job, number one, is to earn the right to accompany you as a guide in your process the way you would like me to show up. Mm-hmm. And that often requires me doing things different from my sales methodology. So back to the idea of training. And you know, you may say Habits at Work is a training company. This is an odd thing to say, Andrew. And my response would be, we're not a training company. Here's why. Whether it's sales training or leadership training or any other type of training, the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve, he was a researcher who looked at memory retention, is real. And basically what he said was 95% of what you learn in a sales or other training experience is gone by the time you finish it. So even when training is good, and even when people enjoy the experience, it's quickly forgotten and seldom implemented. So I think that most sales training is a waste of money, unless you have the reinforcement that turns knowledge into skills through deliberate practice and skills into habits through habit activation, or what we call context design. And I can say a bit more about that, but let me just say this. Humans believe that we have habits, and our decades of research suggests otherwise. It turns out habits have human beings.
That's interesting.
And what I mean by that is, like, if you go to a library, how you'll behave is quiet and respectful. And then you go out to one of your favorite bars in Gothenburg and you'll be loud and telling stories and yelling. Is that because you're all over the place as a human being and erratic? No. It's because the behavior, the habit, is encoded in those places. Mm-hmm. And that's true for all our behavior. We mostly behave in accordance with our mindsets, the people around us, the physical spaces we're in, and the systems, including sales processes, under which we operate. So if you really want to get good at habits, stop looking internally and wondering, you know, do I just not have the willpower, and start asking, is my workplace, my home office, my desk, my colleagues, my manager, my sales process, do they embed and encode the habits as the easy default rather than the difficult choice?
So interesting, and a little bit hard question for every manager. And, you know, we need to think about what, how we set up our teams to succeed. And not only, you know, why are not following the guideline here, you know, or things like that. So,
You think about it, mostly we have the view that non-performing salespeople or humans, and I'll say this carefully, are either stupid or lazy. Mm. Because most of our corrective strategies are training to fix a lack of knowledge or ignorance, or incentives to fix a lack of motivation. And those two things have been deployed as strategies for decades and haven't solved the problem. Because mostly, I believe people are motivated to be good in their jobs, including as salespeople. It's not a motivation problem. And mostly, people have some, maybe even enough knowledge. The question isn't how smart are you? The question is, do you embody the skills? Because selling is not an intellectual game, although being smart helps. Connecting with someone is an embodied skill. Listening with empathy is an embodied skill. And the only way to develop those embodied skills is by doing them in the presence of a coach who gives you feedback.
Yeah.
Like, you don't read a book. Sandler himself said, don't teach a kid to ride a bicycle by putting them in a seminar. Get out there and you get on the bicycle and try it out.
That's true. And I know, you know, habits are hard to form and even harder to keep or you know, get into the rhythm of them and internalizing them. So what are the typical problems when you come out and train companies around this, you know, and get them into the good habits? If we read about your habits there, okay, these are the 12. Okay, now I will start doing them and I will be a rocket star, you know, in my sales team. But it's typically not that easy. You know, everybody who have tried as you know, stop smoking or lose weight or whatever you're trying to break, that's hard. And sales is not any different. So where should we start and how do you help companies break through those and pick up those good habits instead of just pitching or, you know, doing the ordinary stuff?
Yeah. Well, I would say that the place to start is not with the salesperson. It's with the environment around the salesperson. Because although we experience it as hard to change our habits, it's because what we're often trying to do is adopt a habit that's different from the one that's the easy default in an environment. Let me give you an example. If I put you in a candy store and said, I want you to eat only fruits and vegetables, you would find it very, very hard. Because it's just not available. And by analogy, it's very similar in sales. If you have a sales department that has SDRs, set up meetings, and promise a prospect that they'll get a demo, and then as an AE, you get onto a first call and the customer's expecting a demo, and you want to do deep discovery, it's very, very difficult to overcome the setup that you had.
Yeah.
So making habits easy is much less about embodying those habits into the sales team and more about encoding those habits into the environment around the sales team so that, you know, doing the right things is just easy. For example, having an agenda for a meeting is a very easy way to make sure you do the things you're supposed to do in a sales meeting, like make sure you share introductions to build trust. Make sure you ask connection questions rather than just, how are you? So you learn a little bit more about someone and surface our common humanity. Making sure that you close with power, set up the next meeting, acknowledge people's contributions, ask for a little bit of feedback. All the habits that we know are useful in building relationships can be made easy by simply having an agenda versus relying on people's memory, as an example. So it's really looking at all these habits and asking, how do we make them the easy default for people? Rather than the difficult choice.
So interesting. And if we move on a little bit to the trust building part of this, and this of course goes into together. If you're good at habits, you're probably picking up trust much faster. And as you said, you can build trust really quickly. But can you also give us a few tips and tricks on, as a salesperson, you know, what are the critical things to think about in order to be a more trustworthy person? Let's say I have the integrity. I can answer the three questions that you stated there. Yeah, I truly want to help this client then, but I'm having my pitch deck and, you know, we have our discount page and, you know, you start presenting and you start pitching and you start convincing. So where do we start building the trust and how can we have that as a foundation, as a salesperson that really truly wants to be a professional? In the best sense, you know.
Yeah. To earn trust requires two things. Number one is actually being worthy of trust or having integrity. Tell the truth. You have good intentions that are customer focused and you keep your word. But that's not enough. The other side of it is answering the three questions that people use to assess trust in you. Are you sincere? Are you competent? And are you someone with a track record? Have you done this before? And those questions are answered by people often on false signals. So when it comes to asking, are you sincere? What they're really asking is, who are you as a human and what do you want? And so, as I said earlier, your personal origin story as part of your introduction is an answer. Here's who I am based on my background that shows you why I do what I do today. Because if I said, my name is Andrew and I'm leading sales for Habits at Work, and the reason I do it is because I make a lot of money when I close a sale, like, you would close the Zoom instantly. But if I reveal to you like my passion for making salespeople the most trustworthy professional on the planet, now you've got a different answer than self-interest. Because I often say to salespeople, just understand that we smell. And they look at me funnily and I say, we smell of motive. We smell to customers as if we've got a hidden agenda. So be open and clear in the way that you tell people about who you are and why you do what you do. So that's probably the easiest part, is designing your first impression to appear to be trustworthy so that you earn the time in order to demonstrate that you have integrity, what really deserves trust over time. The other thing you should remember as a salesperson is the size of your promises should be proportionate to the amount of trust that you built. For example, if I said, Jacob, I have the numbers to this Friday's lottery ticket, you know, spin, and it's worth $1 billion. Give me $100 million and I'll give you the numbers. You'd be like, Andrew, there's no ways you know that. That promise is disproportionate to my trust in you. And for a lot of salespeople, the first meeting, they show up and say, here's my product and my company and the outcomes we get, the best case study, because your case studies are always your best customers. And this is the ROI you can get. And we're making these big promises before we've even earned the right to be believed. So I like to think of it as little promises early on, made and kept, that make a deposit into your trust bank account. And the more trust you have, the bigger your promises, until you reach a point where you say, Jacob, I promise you my product will do this. It'll get you these outcomes. Would you like to proceed? The last thing I'll say is that making promises that your product is perfect and has no flaws is never believable, because every company has a range of outcomes. And the marketing department will take the best case scenario of their best customers, give that to the sales team as case studies, which they, if they're naive, will take to prospects and say, this is what you can get. Instead of saying, like, we're a great fit for some kinds of companies, we usually get these kinds of results. Here's when we don't deliver these results. Here are the kinds of customers and their behaviors that get the best out of us. Here are the kinds of companies and behaviors that get the worst out of us. And just being really, really honest.
That's interesting. Yeah. And we sometimes joke in the tech industry, as you maybe know, that, you know, we need to keep the developers and the engineers out of the sales booths on fairs and things like that, because they can often recommend their client to, I wouldn't buy this version because there are several severe bugs in it and we are fixing that. So maybe for the fall or next year, you know, it's better version coming out. And that's basically the truth. But, you know, as a salesperson, you, hey, what's who let him in here? You know, and but what you're saying is maybe that's actually a good thing, to be transparent and honest and actually say that, yeah, we're struggling a little bit with this and that, you know, and these are these are also the things that works pretty well.
And here's what I say to young salespeople, but it's true even for experienced salespeople. If you're a customer and you've got 10 salespeople and they all show up and say, we're the best, we get the best results, we're faster, cheaper, more effective, greater ROI, then no one becomes believable.
Yeah.
If you're number 11 and you say, you know what, those companies do those things really well, we do one or two things really well. That's what we do uniquely well. Mm-hmm. We got some flaws, here they are. I would buy from that person all day long versus someone who pretends that everything is perfect, because we just know that that's not true.
Yeah, so we shouldn't be afraid of telling the truth and actually point out our weaknesses in combination with our strength and unique abilities, of course. So,
And as a salesperson, I would have you notice that making this week's sale and this quarter's quota is important, but also take a career view on this. If I sell you something today and you buy it on the promise that everything will be perfect, 6 months later, you discover that there are flaws. Meanwhile, I've gone and got another job. And now I come back to you and I say, remember me? I sold you that last product. I'm with another company. and boy, do we have the best product. You won't even give me the time of day because you've been burned by my false promises in the past.
Yeah, I agree. I also know that you talk about story building a bit, and how does story play storytelling play into the trust building, and can you share a few just ideas or techniques around incorporating that if you want to have that into sales conversation?
Yeah, I would say selling is helping a customer make progress. In order to be effective, you almost always have to change their mind so that they take new actions, including buying from you, but other actions as well. So sales is partly helping people change their mind. Now, as humans, we don't like being told what to do. In fact, we often do the exact opposite of what we're told what to do. And we certainly don't like being told what to do by salespeople. And when someone tells us, you should do this or you should do that, trust me, here's all the data, our mind feels attacked, our ego feels attacked. And so we defend, we deflect, we say, yes, but, or I don't quite feel it. And that's what stories do for us. Stories don't tell. They allow people to see for themselves so that they leave a meeting saying, you know, I've got this grand new idea. I could do A, B, and C and get this outcome. And in a sense, they will feel like they came up with it themselves. What they won't notice is they learned it by seeing for themselves in a story what someone else did and the results that they got. So sometimes people say, don't tell people what to do, show them what to do in a story. I'm a little more extreme than that and say, don't just show them through a story, allow them to see. It's a very passive act. And a well-told story is engaging and people are all in. And what they don't notice is they're learning in the process. Wow. And so I think stories are an essential tool for salespeople. And if you don't have one or 200 stories in a story library, practiced, ready to use, that you take with you to a meeting, maybe thinking this meeting, I need this story for this purpose. Don't expect to make them up on the fly. That's very difficult.
Yeah.
Good sellers prepare stories for a meeting.
I love that. And I love stories, you know, and I probably underutilize that as a habit, because I'm also into the pitching or presenting mode a lot of the time, of course, and you know, responding to objections and questions and like that. But thank you. Thank you so much, Andrew, for those insights. I know you're a busy guy and, you know, rushing to the next meeting soon here. So thank you so much for sharing your insights around habit building and trust building as salespersons. And yeah, if you're really interested in trying to pick up a few of those and try to internalize them. And, you know, for people who really think, wow, this Andrew Sykes guy, he was really killing it here. Can they find you somewhere online or your content, or where should they go?
Yes, please. You know, I'm very active on LinkedIn, so I would love your listeners to connect with me on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. You'll find me with a search, my name, Andrew Sykes and Habits at Work. My company, habitsatwork.com, that's spelled out habitsatwork.com. Is my email address, andrew@habitsatwork.com. I am a professional speaker as well. I have a speaking website, andrewsykes.com. Mm-hmm. And then for people who are really interested in getting good at getting great at literally anything, I'm a facilitator for a company called Serene, Serene.life. And we create experiences for people who want to become unrecognizable to themselves in all the best ways by developing skills from good to just world class in record time. So any of those places, I'd love to connect.
Fantastic. That sounds intriguing. Yeah, absolutely amazing, Andrew. So thank you so much. And I wish you all the best with all those cool projects and companies you're running there. So thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.